I want you to imagine a global financial fire drill. Like the alarms are blaring, global markets are just in a state of absolute panic, and you've got these red numbers flashing across trading screens from, Tokyo to London to New York.
Basically, every trader's worst nightmare.
Right, exactly. And when that happens, where does all the money run to? Because historically, there has only ever been one real panic room, and that is the US dollar.
Yeah, the ultimate safe haven.
Exactly. When the world catches fire, you buy dollars.
Yeah.
But I want you to imagine running to that ultimate safe room, right? You grab the heavy steel handle and you realize somebody just changed the locks.
Which is, I mean, it's a genuinely terrifying thought for any portfolio manager or, central banker out there. Because the bedrock of the entire global financial system, the plumbing that basically keeps world trade moving, it's built on this absolute assumption that that door is always going to open when you need it to.
Right. And welcome to this deep dive into the source material. Today, we're looking at a single, just incredibly revealing source. It's this brand new economic paper dated July 8, 2026, by Orhan Terul. And it's titled Reflex Without Persistence: The Dollar's Multi-Day Safe Haven Reversal in 2025.
Yeah, it's a fairly dense academic title, I'll admit,
Yeah.
but the findings buried inside that data are, well, they're explosive. I mean, they challenge assumptions we've held for literally decades.
Our mission today is to help you understand this massive shift that happened completely under the radar in 2025 and, what it means for the absolute foundation of global finance. So, okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand how the safe haven broke, we kind of first have to understand what it actually is.
Right. Yeah. You have
Yeah.
to define the baseline.
Exactly. And the massive aha moment in this paper is that the dollar's safe haven status, it isn't just one monolithic thing. It's actually two completely distinct behaviors wearing a trench coat.
Yeah, I love that description because historically, economists and financial analysts, they've always treated it as one single phenomenon. Like they look at daily data or even weekly data and they just say, okay, global risk went up, the value of the dollar went up, therefore the haven works.
Right, cause and effect.
Exactly. But the author of this paper, he didn't just look at daily closing prices. He actually looked at high-frequency cross-asset futures data over 16 years.
Wow.
Yeah, massive data set. And he isolated 465 specific risk-off days. And just to be clear, by risk-off, he defined that really strictly as days where the S&P 500 futures fell by more than 1%.
Okay, so we're talking about genuinely bad days in the markets, the days where, people are actually sweating.
Oh, yeah, the days where pure instinct takes over.
Yeah.
And by looking at the data minute by minute on those specific days, he was able to separate this haven behavior into two totally different mechanical concepts.
Okay.
So the first is what he calls the intraday reflex. And this is the automatic algorithmic bid for dollars in the immediate minutes after a stock market drop.
So this is the machines taking over the steering wheel. I mean, we're talking about algorithms that trade in milliseconds, right?
Exactly.
They don't read the nuance of a geopolitical headline. They just see this cascade of red numbers and their programming kicks in. They instantly buy the deepest, most liquid asset in the world, so they have cash on hand. And, that deep pool is the US dollar.
That is the core of it, yeah.
Yeah.
The reflex happens in a 5-minute window. It's pure market plumbing.
Yeah.
But then you have the second concept, which is the multi-day persistence.
And this one is human.
Right.
Yes.
This is what happens over the following days as actual human portfolio managers arrive at the office, they sit down in their committee meetings, and they assess the long-term risk of whatever just caused the crash.
They actually think about it.
Right. And then they deliberately reallocate their massive asset pools based on that human assessment.
I love this distinction so much. And I think it helps to visualize it like touching a hot stove. Like the reflex is yanking your hand back instantly. You don't even think about it. Your nervous system just does it to protect you.
Yes,
So
exactly.
that's the algorithmic 5-minute trade buying dollars. But the persistence is, the conscious decision you make a day later to just not cook in that kitchen anymore for the rest of the week. That's the multi-day portfolio shift.
That is such a perfect way to visualize it. Because what the paper found in the 2025 data is that the reflex, yanking the hand back, that worked perfectly.
So the machines did their job.
The machines did their job. In the first few minutes of a market crash, the trading algorithms bought dollars just like they always do. But the multi-day persistence, that conscious human decision to stay in that kitchen, that completely broke down.
Wow. And to really see how bizarre this 2025 anomaly was, we kind of need to compare it to history, right? Because human managers didn't always act this way. Like, let's rewind to August 2011. Standard & Poor's downgrades the credit rating of the United States.
A huge moment.
Right. I mean, this is a massive shock originating inside the U.S. It's America's own debt getting downgraded. But what happens? Equities tank and global capital still comes flooding into U.S. treasuries and the dollar. It was like the textbook flight to quality. Even when America was literally the source of the problem, America was still the panic room.
Yeah, the 2011 downgrade is basically the classic baseline for how deeply entrenched the dollar is. The market essentially decided that even a downgraded U.S. dollar was safer than literally anything else out there.
But then we get to 2025.
Right, we moved to April 2025. Mm. And the global landscape was just dominated by this escalating series of trade and tariff conflicts. So again, U.S. equities fell sharply on the news. But this time, the U.S. dollar ultimately depreciated over the following days.
So instead of rallying against the panic, it just sank with it. Which means the algorithms did their job. But the humans looked at the situation and decided the panic room wasn't safe anymore.
And what's fascinating here is the clock decomposition data the author uses to actually prove this mechanical split. Because remember how we separated the reaction into the machine reflex and the human persistence?
Yeah.
Well, the author tracks exactly when the dollar was being sold off during these 2025 stress events. And he found that absolutely 0% of the dollar's multi-day depreciation happened during Wall Street cash trading hours.
Wait, literally 0%, like none of it?
Not a single fraction of the broader sell-off. I mean, when the opening bell rang in New York and the U.S. markets were open, the algorithms were firing and U.S.-based institutions were just maintaining the status quo. The dollar held its ground.
That's crazy.
The entire massive depreciation of the dollar happened completely off-session. It happened overnight, basically while America was sleeping.
So, okay, let me make sure I'm walking through the mechanics of this correctly. Let's say a headline about a massive new tariff breaks at, I don't know, 2 p.m. in New York.
Okay, yep.
Equities drop. The algorithms instantly buy the dollar. That's the reflex. The U.S. trading day ends at 4 p.m. Everyone goes home thinking things are, you know, relatively stable because the dollar held up.
Right.
But then it's morning in Tokyo. It's morning in London and Frankfurt. Human portfolio managers at Asian and European desks are logging on. They're looking at this escalating tariff situation and they're saying, this U.S. policy is too unpredictable. Get us out of the dollar. And they just quietly dunk it over the next 5 days while the U.S. algorithms are turned off.
You've literally just described the exact dynamic. I mean, algorithmic trading and human decision making were operating on completely different geographical timelines. Mm. And they were pulling in entirely opposite directions.
Oh.
Yeah, the algorithmic liquidity reflex survived because, well, the plumbing works. But the fundamental human trust, that multi-day persistence, it just evaporated.
Okay, but this raises a huge mechanical question for me. Because if global capital is actively abandoning the U.S. dollar in the days after a major market crash, where exactly is that capital going? I mean, we are talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. You can't just, like, hide that under a mattress.
No, absolutely not.
It has to go somewhere deep.
It does. And the paper tracks this flow of money, what they call the cross-asset rotation, beautifully. Mm. Institutional investors didn't just throw their money at anything. They specifically fled to what the author categorizes as rival reserve currencies.
Okay.
So we're talking about the Swiss franc, the euro, and the Japanese yen.
Mm.
And they also flooded into German bunds, which is essentially the European equivalent of U.S. Treasury bonds.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to push back here for a second. Because you're listing the euro and the yen and the Swiss franc, but I distinctly remember watching the news during the 2025 panics. Gold was making front page news every single day.
Right.
Yeah, the charts were just through the roof. So why isn't gold on that leg of safe havens? Didn't the smart money just flee to gold?
It's an incredibly common observation, and it's actually something the paper addresses directly with this major aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
The gold rally you remember from 2025 was, economically speaking, a complete illusion.
A complete illusion? How can it be an illusion if the price is literally printing higher on the screen?
Because you have to factor in the mechanics of currency translation. So gold is universally priced in U.S. dollars. If the value of the dollar itself drops, the price of gold automatically goes up on the chart, even if the actual fundamental human demand to own a bar of gold hasn't changed by a single ounce.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right. So to prove this wasn't a real safe haven rush, the author looked at the price of gold translated into euros during those exact same 2025 stress days.
I see where this is going. So if the global demand for gold didn't actually change and it was just a side effect of a weak dollar, then pricing gold in a stable currency like the euro shouldn't have shown a massive spike at all.
And the data backs that up perfectly. Priced in euros, the response of gold was totally flat.
Yeah.
I mean, statistically insignificant.
That's fascinating.
Gold didn't suddenly become more valuable in the eyes of the world. The US dollar just became a weaker measuring stick. The real institutional money, like the massive sovereign wealth funds and pension funds, they weren't loading up on gold. They were rotating their portfolios into the Swiss franc, the euro, and German bonds.
That is just mind-blowing because it strips away all the noise and isolates the weakness specifically to the US dollar itself. And, you know, the fact that they moved to German bonds is interesting. I noticed in the paper they also look at US Treasury bonds because usually Treasuries and the dollar, they move in lockstep during a crisis. Did Treasuries lose their haven status too?
So the reaction in the US Treasury market was deeply revealing because the weakness wasn't uniform across the board. The short-term treasuries, things like the two-year note, they still function relatively normally. But the severe weakness was specifically concentrated at the very long end of the maturity curve.
So we're talking about, what, the 30-year bonds?
Exactly. The 30-year bonds and the ultra bonds.
Which logically makes perfect sense if you think about what those bonds actually represent, right? Because a two-year U.S. bond is basically just a bet on what the Federal Reserve's interest rate policy is going to be over the next 24 months. It's almost like a cash equivalent.
Right.
But a 30-year bond, that is a generational bet on the long-term credibility, stability, and geopolitical dominance of the United States government. And that's exactly where the human portfolio managers were finding cracks.
Which kind of brings us to the big why. Like, why did this happen in 2025? What was fundamentally different about the cause of the market panics in 2025 compared to, you know, previous decades?
Yeah. So to answer the why, the author divides all market shocks into two distinct economic categories. And it's crucial that we look at this purely through the lens of economic data classification, totally setting aside any politics.
Right.
The first category is scheduled macro shocks. And these are your routine economic heartbeats. Things like Federal Reserve interest rate announcements, monthly inflation data, or, you know, the monthly payroll reports, the standard operating procedure for the financial world. Like, even if the news is terrible, it's terrible news on a predictable schedule.
Exactly. The market can price in terrible news if it understands the rules of the game. But the second category is what the paper calls non-scheduled or credibility shocks. These are unpredictable, discretionary U.S. policy actions. And in the specific context of 2025, this primarily meant the sudden escalation of trade tariffs and the breakdown of established trade agreements.
And just to be crystal clear for you listening, we aren't taking any kind of political stance on trade policy or tariffs here. The paper doesn't make a value judgment on whether tariffs are, you know, good or bad for the domestic economy.
Right, exactly.
We are strictly looking at the mechanics of how global financial markets categorize and react to these events. So how did the multi-day persistence react to a scheduled shock versus a credibility shock?
The divergence is stark. I mean, during scheduled data shocks, even when inflation ran super hot or jobs numbers missed terribly, the dollar remained a safe haven. The multi-day persistence held up, just like it did in 2011. But during those non-scheduled credibility shocks, the multi-day persistence completely inverted. Instead of a flight to quality, international investors engaged in a flight from U.S. policy. A tariff announcement introduced this unquantifiable risk, so they actively dumped the dollar to buy European and Swiss assets.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the author doesn't just look in the rearview mirror to see what happened after the fact. He brings in data proving that the market actually started to anticipate this breakdown in trust. And to show this, we have to look at the options market. Now, the options market is basically the ultimate crystal ball for trader anxiety. It tells us exactly what professional investors are most afraid of.
Right. And the paper isolates a very specific metric here. It's the USD 25 delta risk reversal.
Okay, let me try to translate that into plain English, because the underlying concept is actually quite intuitive. When you buy options, you're fundamentally buying insurance.
Exactly.
Historically, in the currency markets, institutional players pay a premium for insurance against the dollar getting too strong during a global panic. They know from history that the dollar is going to spike when things get scary, and they want to protect their portfolios against that sudden strength. It's like paying extra for hurricane insurance when you live on the coast of Florida, right? You don't know when the storm is coming, but you know the specific type of danger to expect.
Right, and that historical norm is often referred to as pricing in the dollar smile, anticipating the currency will rise when global risk rises. traders gladly pay for that insurance.
But in 2025, the dynamic flipped. For the first time, traders were paying a massive premium to insure against dollar weakness during a panic. They were suddenly paying top dollar for, like, drought insurance in Florida.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
They were looking at the geopolitical landscape and the escalating tariffs, and they were saying, we actually think the U.S. dollar is going to collapse if there's a panic, and we need to insure our portfolios against American weakness. They literally priced a loss of faith in U.S. policy right into the derivatives market.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it introduces a vital concept that economists call contestable reserve status.
Contestable reserve status, the idea that the crown is heavy and you don't get to wear it forever just because you wore it yesterday.
Exactly. The U.S. dollar is the world's primary reserve currency.
Yeah.
But that status is not guaranteed by the laws of physics or, you know, some unbreakable global treaty. It's fully contestable. It has to constantly compete with other assets like the euro or the Swiss franc.
Right.
Based on its perceived safety and rule of law. The paper makes a really compelling argument that ordinary economic turbulence doesn't threaten that perceived safety, but unpredictable policy shocks actions that make the United States itself look like an unreliable actor on the global stage, those actively erode that safety and invite competitors to challenge the dollar's dominance.
So what does this all mean? We've spent a lot of time talking about high-frequency algorithms and, you know, the mechanics of options pricing and the plumbing of European bond markets. But why should you, the listener, care about the intricacies of the global reserve currency?
That's a good question.
Right. It ultimately comes down to a concept called exorbitant privilege. Because the dollar is the undisputed safe haven, the U.S. government has the unique ability to run massive national deficits and borrow money incredibly cheaply. The world is always willing to lend America money because they view it as the safest vault on earth. And that cheap borrowing trickles down to literally everything in your financial life.
Oh, absolutely everything.
It keeps the interest rate on your home mortgage lower. It makes it cheaper for your company to secure a loan, to build a new facility, and, you know, hire more people.
Right. The automatic bid for dollars during a crisis is a foundational pillar of America's cheap domestic financing. So if the dollar loses that multi-day haven status, if the rest of the world decides that U.S. policy is just too unpredictable and they start demanding a risk premium to hold American debt, the cost of borrowing goes up for the U.S. government.
And when the government's borrowing costs go up,
it drags everyone else's costs up with it. Corporate loans become expensive. Credit card rates rise. Inflation becomes significantly harder for the Federal Reserve to control. I mean, the standard of living for the average citizen is directly impacted.
It's essentially an invisible force field protecting the U.S. consumer economy. And this paper provides hard empirical data showing that in 2025, the force field flickered.
Flickered is an accurate way to frame it. And it actually brings us to a crucial kind of calming caveat from the author. Tarul's very careful to define the events of 2025 as a specific stress episode.
Right, a stress episode.
He does not claim that this data proves a permanent regime change or, you know, the final end of the U.S. dollar. In fact, he notes that by early 2026, as the tariff turmoil began to subside and policy predictability returned, the options market and the multi-day persistence actually started to revert to their historical norms. The fever broke.
The human portfolio managers came back to the kitchen, so to speak. They decided the U.S. was safe to cook in again.
Exactly. The paper proves that the multi-day haven can reverse, and empirically did reverse for a highly turbulent year, but it remains strictly agnostic on whether 2025 was a one-off aberration or maybe the first tremor of a much larger permanent shift in global finance.
Which leaves us with a pretty staggering final thought to mull over, because we now know that the multi-day haven is vulnerable. If just a single year of, you know, uncoordinated internal policy-driven shocks can temporarily reroute the flow of global capital away from the U.S. dollar to Europe and Japan, what would happen if a coordinated block of rival nations intentionally engineered a massive credibility shock during a future geopolitical crisis?
That's the real question.
Right. Like, if they purposely stress-tested that exact vulnerability while the market was panicking, could the United States' exorbitant privilege, the very thing that keeps our borrowing costs low, just vanish overnight? Next time the global financial fire drill rings and everyone runs to the ultimate safe room, will the key still turn in the lock?